This is Kelly Blewett. I'm joined tonight by Patricia Lockwood, a poet and author whose new memoir, Priest Daddy, details her coming of age in Cincinnati and St. Louis. Patricia used to live on the Ohio River and once worked at Joseph Beth as a bookseller. She's best known for her poem, Rape Joke, which won a Pushcart Prize, and she's often referred to as the poet laureate of Twitter. Selections from Priest Daddy appeared in The New Yorker, including Patricia's account of attending a protest at an abortion clinic as a child. Priest Daddy received excellent reviews from The New York Times and The Guardian, and one of my favorite local readers praised what she called the book's whirligig sentences and athletic prose. Welcome, Patricia.
Thank you so much. I like the idea of it being both whirligig and athletic. It makes you think of like a French circus acrobat, which is a good image.
So tell us a little bit about the memoir.
Well, it's sort of the account of my husband and I moving back in for about 8 months with my priest dad and my crazy like a fox Irish Catholic mother when my husband had an unexpected health crisis. So my father's kind of like a big, looming, but also very absurd, surreal, comic character, very dominating in the home. And my mom is sort of a comic relief that comes alongside that. So when we moved back there and I was living with him again, I was like, I just have to start writing some of this down, I think.
Yeah, you talk about how you got like a notebook and started just copying people's dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, that's all I could do. There was also a seminarian, which is a young man who's studying to become a priest, living with us, literally, you know, at one point he was across the hall from our bedroom, and he happened to be a very, very photogenic character. He's a very tender sort of character. He's an innocent, but at the same time, he's got to learn what a MILF is.
Now, how is it that your father is a priest? You don't hear many people say that.
Basically, he was an atheist, a submariner, so he's down on a submarine during the Cold War. And on the course of one of his patrols, they screened the movie The Exorcist for the men 72 times. So it deeply, deeply affected my father. And on the next patrol, he converted to Christianity. And he decided he was meant to be a Lutheran minister. And then once he was a Lutheran minister, he was like, not hardcore enough, you know, so I'm going to take it all the way and convert to Catholicism. And when that happens, when a married minister of another faith converts to Catholicism, you can apply for a special dispensation from Rome and become a married Catholic priest.
And thus you are a human loophole.
Human loophole through which I entered the world. And it's very interesting because it's only because of Vatican II that he was allowed to do this. It was this sort of the thing that was allowed under Vatican II. But my dad is the great enemy of Vatican II because it was, you know, a liberal council, and he considers himself much more of a traditionalist. So he's a contradiction in that sense, too. You know, he is a married priest, but he's like, we're not letting these other guys in here.
So you start writing down what your parents are saying.
Yes, and the seminarian.
And the seminarian. And at the same time, you're sort of reflecting on some moments growing up.
Yes, flashbacks. Because a lot of times there was an entry point in something that was happening. You know, say I would be at the seminarian's ordination. I would think about my father's ordination. We would have some discussion about, you know, abortion or something like that in the household. And I would think back to the pro-life movement as I experienced it in the early and mid-80s. So it was a very natural sort of threshold for that kind of thinking, you know, that you walk back into your past again.
So let's hear a little bit about the book. And we mentioned that you returned home because your husband had a health crisis.
Yes.
And I think the selection that we're going to start with is an account of how you met your husband.
I wrote a poem today. I typed to Jason, a total stranger who lived in Fort Collins, Colorado. We had met by chance on a bulletin board devoted to the discussion of poetry, and we're now in the grip of a fevered correspondence. It's about Billie Holiday giving herself an abortion in a hot bath. I wrote a poem today, too, he responded, not 5 minutes later. It's about the splendor and the majesty of the Tetons. The feeling of getting an email, as if the ghost of a passenger pigeon had flown into your home and delivered it directly into your head. So swooping and unexpected and feathered was the feeling. How suddenly full you felt of white vapor. How you set your fingers on the keyboard to write back, and your fingers disappeared almost up to the first knuckle in those clattering beige keys. So much more satisfying than the shallow keys that came later, or the touch screens that came after that. The story of any courtship is one of ephemera, dead vehicles, outdated technology. name cards, canoes, pagers, the roller rink, telegrams, mixtapes, radio dedications, the drive-in, hotmail.com. "Send me yours," I wrote to him, at the exact moment that he responded to tell me to send him mine. Most of my poems were about mermaids losing their virginity to Jesus, metaphor, and most of his poems were about the majesty of canyons, arroyos, and mesas. The West had infected him with some sort of landscape mania. These were essentially poems a cartoon roadrunner would write after retiring from a career of anarchy. He had, however, written one good image, which stays with me even now. The milk bottles burst like scared chickens. It might strike you as irresponsible to fall in love on the strength of one image about scared chickens, but this was a different time. I didn't even know what he looked like. He was under the mistaken impression that I was 50 years old and Latina. We were all made up of words.
Thank you. So you met Jason online.
On the internet, baby.
And your parents were a little bit skeptical.
Well, remember back to what that time was like for parents, what they believed about the internet. Everyone from the internet was a murderer, pretty much. And to be fair, this was before there was any sort of, you know, standardized dating service. This was literally just someone you met in basically a chat room that you were, you know, talking about poetry with. It doesn't seem that legit when it comes to that sort of thing. And yet it was.
And yet it was.
13 years, maybe, something like that later, we are still married today.
Well, he shows up from Colorado.
Yes, very peaceful-looking Colorado-type person who climbs mountains in his mind constantly.
Am I right in remembering that you were engaged after the first day?
He got down on his knees as much as you can in his car in the parking lot of the Kroger, right across from the White Castle over, like, on the west side. And I was like, let's do this. You know what? My parents are back home. Get me away from here, basically. Mm-hmm. So then we went back home, of course, and had a family council with my parents, after which we went to the Don Pablo's in Rookwood. And halfway there on that drive, my father revealed to Jason that he did have a gun tucked into his priest pants.
And your dad has always had, it seems from the episodes in the book that you describe, a kind of, I don't know, how would you describe his reaction to your work, and what was his reaction to Rape Joke?
My dad likes to be proud of his kids, but I don't think that he looks too closely at maybe the substance of the things he's proud of them for. So I think he knows of it in a general sense. I mean, he's never read it. He once obliquely complimented me on my strength at one point, which I took to be a compliment in that regard. But it's hard to know. And in a way, that affords you a lot of freedom, that he doesn't really read those things. But he considers the fact that you have achieved these goals to be, that he considers that very important.
It seems like, you know, obviously you moved out as soon as you could with Jason. But also in the book, there's a feeling of kind of reflecting on having been part of a group and leaving, but never really necessarily being able to leave.
To totally extricate yourself,
so
right?
So can we hear just another little snippet from the book on this topic?
All my life I have overheard. All my life I have listened to what people will let slip when they think you are part of their we. A we is so powerful. It is the most corrupt and formidable institution on earth. Its hands are full of the crispest and most persuasive currency. Its mouth is full of received repeating language. The we closes its ranks to protect the space inside it, where the air is different. It does not protect people. It protects its own shape. You have belonged to many of them. So have I. The church was one of mine. It was my family. The story of a family is always a story of complicity. It's about not being able to choose the secrets you've been let in on. The question for someone who is raised in a closed circle and then leaves it is, what is the us and what is the them? And how do you ever move from one to the other?
Thank you. Well, Patricia, thank you so much for coming and talking to us a little bit about your new book, Priest Daddy.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been talking to Patricia Lockwood about her new memoir, Priest Daddy. For more information on this title, visit our website at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Kelly Blewett.